No, I didn't put it up.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. We're going. Here we are. There we are. That's it. We got it. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Okay. I have an apple up here. I will not eat this while I sing, but I'll eat later. Okay. That's funny. Oops.
I'm a mess.
Don't mind the show up here. Okay. Well, I'm gonna sing one song, and then Ron, we're gonna do some things a little different tonight with how music and preaching is gonna work. Ron's gonna come up after one song. Whoa. And then we'll probably get some music in a little bit later in the service. So we're gonna start with one song. Grab your hymnals and stand. I won't make you stand the whole time like I did last time. You guys are like, man, if we stand the whole time, you're killing us. If you end up sitting down, it's okay, I understand. But we're going to sing one song together here, Oh Great God, number 35 together.
Thank you. You know, change is sometimes difficult to endure. It can be stressful, so I hope you're not stressed out tonight with a little bit of change-up in our schedule of service tonight. I'll explain more about why we're doing this in the message, but we're going to take off a little bit for where we left off last week with David. In his youth, had prepared for being king by being a shepherd. So I mentioned that we're going to talk about what it means to be a shepherd. What does a shepherd do? And so we're going to talk about the shepherd's work tonight. And especially in light of the times we're in, I think we all know that we have a pulpit committee that is searching and praying for a man to come to shepherd our flock. And so it's important perhaps to be reminded of what that means. What does it mean for the kind of person we will be looking for? And or tonight, there's another way you can apply the message. You can look at this message tonight from who God is, or who Jesus is to us. And how does he deal with us? How does he act toward us? Either way, a shepherd must be as Jesus is to us. We're going to look at several passages before the outline, main outline. The first one is found in 1 Peter 5, and that is where Peter is instructing fellow elders. I'm going to go very quickly through these. And he says, "The elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed." And here's the instruction. "Shepherd the flock of God, tend to them," which what shepherd means. "Shepherd, tend to the flock of God, which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock." We learn several things in this passage. First of all, the flock doesn't belong to the shepherd here. It belongs to God. You belong to God. We all belong to him. He is the chief shepherd. Those we bring here as a under-shepherd are serving the Lord to fulfill what he wants for us. So that's the first thing. The flock belongs to God. Those that tend to guide and lead the flock have a certain way they're supposed to do this. Not for, not under compulsion, not forced to do the jobs and say, "We have nobody else, you got to do it." No, it's not that way. It's willingly. The man comes willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. You sort of get the idea that the pastor, the shepherd, is one who faces the work with an anticipation, a desire, a hunger. It's a passion he has to do this work, not by for dishonest gain, not as being lords. In other words, there's a temptation sometimes to abuse the office, the responsibility of pastor. And I see it. I've seen it in some. You all have seen that, where they've been. Some have fallen into that temptation and have abused that. But it's for an example to live as an example. You know, the clearest for me example of a shepherd. I went out to a church, a small country church in Oklahoma. A chaplain buddy that I had was pastoring out there. And so he invited us to come one Sunday morning. And so we went, and there's a congregation maybe of around 40 to 50 people in the group. And something very unusual happened. Before my friend got up to preach, or before we even sang, one of the elders got up. And he stood up in the pulpit, and he said, Sue, how's your family doing? I know you've been through some things, and Joe, your son back from college? Oh, there he is. Hey, how is college for you? And he went through the whole group, kind of touching with, "How are you? What's going on?" And I thought that day, that's the first time I've seen a shepherd dealing with the sheep in a group. I thought it was a very, very positive beginning for our service that day. Well, it's obvious that sheep need care and oversight. That's why God has given shepherds to a group. Why shepherds? Why do we need oversight? When I was in high school, I was on a wilderness outing with, I had probably 6 or 7 campers under my care, and we had 20 to 30 boys in our group and a leader from a college that was a teacher there. And one night we were out in the dark, just walking in the woods, and we came to a clearing, and the leader said, he came and spoke quietly to all of the council and leadership. He said, "Sneak away. Sneak away." And so I didn't know what he was doing, but the leaders kind of just melted into the woods. And we watched what happened. I'm not recommending you do this, okay? But what happened was that the group of campers formed their own leadership. And they all still started pulling our knives out for protection. And so we stopped that little exercise. But you see, a group, a fundamental principle in group dynamics is that a group will not stay leaderless. Someone's going to rise to the occasion. And usually it might be the wrong direction. That's why there's such a demand, a need for leaders that are chosen, that fulfill certain qualifications and have those qualifications as part of their life. Well, there's another passage that's found in Ephesians 4, if you want to turn there briefly. And here this chapter talks about unity, and he talks about gifts. And talking about gifts of people to the church, and he mentioned the prophets and the apostles who were foundational, but then evangelists, and then some pastors and teachers. It's not clear whether this is one person or several persons. Some pastors are good at caring for the flock, and they're not so good at teaching. Some are good at teaching and are not so good at caring for the flock. Those are two separate needs, two separate skill sets, but both are required. Whether they're one person or several persons, the body, the flock, needs that care. And then the third one, which I'm not going to go into, it's found in 1 Timothy 3, where it lists all the qualifications for an elder. And sometime you might want to read that, look at that. And tonight I'm not going to talk about the other need, and that is that of a teacher. I think we all know what a teacher is. We know when they communicate. We know when we, quote, get something that's needful, relevant, helpful. So tonight we're going to talk about things we learn about a shepherd from David himself, who learned them as he was a shepherd. It's in a very, very famous, familiar passage, Psalm 23. And I'm going to read that just by way of reminder and help. Perhaps that tonight we can see some qualities here, not only of the man we'd like to call, but also of how the Lord is to us. And David says, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." The first thing the shepherd does is to take care of the needs of the sheep. Now, there is a difference between needs and wants. We all have a lot of wants that aren't needs. They're desires that come to us just by way of life, and perhaps by way of desiring something we shouldn't have. That's not a need. Paul said in Philippians chapter 4 that he learned something. He learned how to be abased, and he learned how to abound. The word abase comes from actually an architectural term. On a pedestal, a large pillar in a building, or at that time perhaps in the temple, there was a round pedestal that supported the pillar. That was called the base. And so when something was abased, it was at the bottom. So what Paul is saying is, I know how to be on the bottom. And of course the context is, here is a gift that he was given. I know how to be on the bottom, and I know how to abound. Both of those things are learned things. There are things that through the exercise of life we learn, I can do without. I don't have to have these things. Hebrews 13:5 says, in a list of instructions, one was about marriage, but this instruction is, let your conduct be without covetousness. That's a pretty strong word for really, really wanting it and looking at it, longing for it. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for I have said, I will never leave you or forsake you. That's the heart of the shepherd. We talked about that last week, that David, when he went after the lion and the bear, he didn't know that wouldn't end in a a death for him. He was willing to lay down his life for the sheep. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Therefore, I can boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What will man do to me? That's Hebrews 13. And then there's another place. Is having food and raiment, let us be content. Now, I found very interesting that those are the only two things that sheep provide. Food and raiment. They provide wool, they provide meat. And, God doesn't keep pets. He keeps sheep. Sheep are meant to produce something. But the need then is something that are basic to life. Not all sheep see how good it is with the flock. Some of the things I've done for this message is read from Philip Keller's book on the shepherd that looks at Psalm 23, and then I talked to Ken Hargis. Ken raised sheep. And so from both of those, I learned a few things about sheep. And Philip shared a story about one of his ewes that no matter where they were, this ewe would always want to go over the fence. Even if the grass on the other side was brown and dried up, that ewe wanted to get across and mess up the fence. The grass is always greener on the other side. It's a phenomenon of, I don't know what. Something that we look at and say, well, maybe it's better over there. Maybe it's better over in that church. Or maybe it's better with this other job. The grass is not always greener on the other side. In fact, what Keller said was that this ewe was a bad example to the other sheep. The other sheep started to follow this ewe across the fence. And so he made lamb chops out of her. So what are our basic needs? Let's think about this for a moment. Just things we need. We need food and we need water. Now, we don't expect our pastor to feed us, do we? Water and food, or real food. Although we're really good at eating here. We don't expect that. Because we're in a very, very affluent world. How many of you did not eat lunch today, or you didn't have enough money even to have lunch? No one. How many of you had more than one set of clothes you had taken out of the closet to wear today? We are affluent, so we don't need those things. Although we do need them, but we don't need someone else to do it, help us with that. Another need we do have, though, is we need mending from the ravages of sin, our own, or perhaps the sins of others against us. We need help with forgiving, for restoration, for instruction. We need protection from unknown danger. Sheep aren't always aware of what's around them. The pastor, the shepherd, should be aware of what's dangerous for the sheep. We need, as sheep, to be loved. I don't know of anything that's more important in the life of a group, and that is to know they're loved. We need to sense that we belong. That's a human thing. Why do gangs form? Why do cliques form in groups? It's because we all desire to belong and sense that this is my place. This is my family. These are people that love me and who I love. And we need connection. Nobody can be alone and do well and thrive. We all need others. Another thing we need is to be known. I think that's a characteristic of God himself. God is self-revealing. God has put the universe out here to tell us about himself. God has created the handiwork on the earth to show us his characteristics. He's given us the scriptures so we can be known. And there's something in us that wants to be known and loved and brought in close to other people. Jesus said about the sheep, he said, I am the good shepherd, and I lay down my life for the sheep, and I know my sheep, I know them by name, and I call them, and they know my voice. In fact, Jesus knows every intimate detail about us. Think about the hairs of our head. You know that parable. He knows every hair is numbered, and a sparrow doesn't fall to the ground that God doesn't know it, and that's just in the natural animal world. And he certainly knows about us. And if he clothes the grass of the field, how much more would he clothe us? So he knows us. He knows the details about us. Ken was telling me that when he got into raising sheep, he'd spend a lot of time with the sheep, and he had a sheep named. And then he began to get busy. He bought more sheep, and he didn't know the names. They all had numbers, and they didn't do as well. We're not numbers. We're people with needs and names and families and connections. And a shepherd knows those things about people. I never worked with sheep, but I did work with horses. And over the years that I worked with these same horses, I got to know, of course, names. That was probably the easy part. Then I began to learn personalities. Horses have personalities just like humans. I knew what horses didn't like to be saddled. You get nipped one time, and you're very, very careful. You learn which ones will crowd you in the stall. You know which ones don't like to be tied up. You know which ones which one is the boss, the head horse in the group. All personality. The shepherd knows that. And then we need hope. We need example. Those are our basic needs, and the shepherd provides it. Number two, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. Why would a shepherd bring sheep into a green pasture? Well, none. One is to eat. But sheep eat normally as they're browsing, not lying down. So why would a shepherd make his sheep lie down, and how does he do that? Well, that's part of what we're going to do tonight. We're going to do a little lying down. A sheep will lie down after it's eaten, after it's had its food. And I trust right now this is the aspect of feeding time for us tonight. We're feeding. Then the sheep does something called rumination. Cows, deer, goats, sheep are ruminators. They will regurgitate food that's been eaten back up into the mouth, and they chew it. It's part of the digestion. It's part of getting more nutrient out of the food as they chew it. It's what they call chewing the cud. Now, I'm just going to... You might not be like me, okay? But sometimes I will hear a message, and I'll walk out the door. I'll maybe have something to eat and get in the car. And if you ask me, what did you hear tonight? I'd have to go, well, we did something about something. And maybe a topic will come up. So tonight we're going to try to ruminate a little bit and see if some of the nutrient might help more tonight. So he makes them lie down. Well, how does he do that? Well, he has to remove. He has to address things that will keep a sheep agitated. One thing that will agitate a sheep is a predator or a robber. If the sheep are out in the wild and there are coyotes off in the distance, they'll be on edge. If there are the mountain lions or the cats coming by, the big cats, the sheep will be agitated. And sheep are... How do you describe this? If one jumps, 10 more will jump at the same time and say, "What are you doing over there?" And it's just a reaction, immediate reaction, because one sheep did it and 10 more follow. So he has to address, are there things out there the sheep are aware of that are creating agitation and fear? The second thing are parasites. The shepherd will know the signs of parasites in the sheep. In Africa, according to Keller, he had to deal with flies. the botfly, would lay eggs in the nostril of the sheep, and the larvae would crawl up into the sinus cavities and just drive, just you can imagine this thing itching and crawling around inside your skull, and it would just drive the sheep, and they'd be banging their heads on things, and even can kill themselves in the effort to relieve the fly problem. So he would apply a mixture of sulfur and oil on the face of the sheep to deal with flies. Another thing that disturbs sheep are inter-sheep competitions, issues between the sheep. Now, sheep have a pecking order just like other groups of animals, like horses and so on. And there's a head sheep, and the new sheep come in, they're going to find out who's in charge and who can eat where, because they'll get butted if they're in the wrong spot. And so what the shepherd would do, when he saw this competition, these little skirmishes happening, he'd step into that group with a staff, and he said the sheep would calm down. The shepherd was there. I don't know if your family was like this. If I was squabbling with my brother, my dad would just have to walk in the room, and we'd stop. You know why. Another thing that would agitate sheep is if they're hungry. If they're not on good ground, if the grass isn't green, if they're not getting the nutrient, getting enough, they'd be agitated. They won't lay down. So a calm sheep will rest and ruminate, and the food will have a building, transforming effect on the sheep. So he calms us, creates an atmosphere to get the benefit from the food they eat. The third thing, he leads to a safe place to drink. Now, water is essential for life, and sheep drink anywhere from a gallon to 5 gallons a day, depending on the weather, the moisture content in the atmosphere, the amount of moisture they're getting off the plants, or if they're lactating and they need more moisture. It's a variable. But the shepherd knows they need that, and so he will lead his sheep to places where they get good water. Now, Psalm says they go to still water. I asked Ken about that. He said sheep are very, very timid. And if something is unusual, they will back away. And when one backs away, they all back away because it's unusual, it's out of the ordinary, and they're not used to that. Horses are a little bit like that. If they've not been through a stream or a creek or something, if they just have a hard time with a new thing. And so they're timid. So still water is a little easier to perhaps go into. Fast water, and you probably heard this, fast, deep water can overpower a sheep because of the water getting in the wool and it gets very heavy. And stagnant water. Certainly a shepherd wouldn't find a stagnant pool of water and say, okay, you guys drink this stuff. They will not do well. The shepherd knows where to go, and he leads them. Remember what Jesus said, that the sheep hear my voice and they follow me. Ken also told me a story about as he was raising sheep, after the young ram sheep were of age and they were taken care of, he would separate the ram sheep into one field, and the ewes and the young ewes would be another field, and the breeding ram would be somewhere else. And so he was dealing with the ewes all the time. He was out there. They knew him. He'd feed them. And the young ram sheep were over here. And one day he had to move the young rams somewhere else, went out there. And it was like chaos city. As he went out there, they just ran all over. He tried driving. He tried coaxing with food. They wouldn't listen to him. So what he did was he got them up near the barn, got them into a pen. And every day he went out there with some food and began to touch them and talk to the sheep. He said after 3 days, he'd go out there and call them, and they would follow him because he then had a relationship with the sheep. He leads them to still water. Jesus, when he was ministering, they were on the road one day in a town of Samaria by Jacob's well, and a woman came and he said, would you give me a drink? And she responded, "How is it that you, being a Jew, asking me, a Samaritan, for a drink?" Jesus responded to her and said, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that saith to thee, 'Give me to drink,' you would have asked of him and he would have given you living water." I like the calm and gentle, tender way that Jesus deals with people, because that's just how he deals with you and I. The fourth work of the shepherd, he restores my soul. Sheep are a danger to themselves. One of your worst enemies is yourself. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Do you say, do you agree with that? You sense that inside yourself? Are there times when you're discouraged with your own self and what you do and have done and say, what's with me? Well, the shepherd comes when those weights, those things come to us to restore our soul, our view, our understanding. And Peter's an example of falling under his own weight. You remember how just before the cross, Jesus explained to the disciples he was going to go and so on. And he boldly said, "Even if it means death, I'm going to go follow and do the same." And Jesus said to Peter, said, "Satan has asked to sift you as wheat. But I prayed for you that when you are tried, that you come back and strengthen your brothers." And you know the story at the warming fire that night when Jesus was under questioning and the beatings began. There were those that were asking him about his relationship to Jesus. He denied it all. And then seeing Jesus, he realized what he had done, recognized it, and went out and wept bitterly. Wept bitterly. What a failure he felt like. What a shame to carry this, that I could not even say that I was with him, that I knew him. Jesus goes to the cross and then comes back and appears to the disciples at different times. At the end of John, we read where Peter and John and some of the other disciples were down by the lake. And Peter says, "I want to go fishing." Now, if you are a fisherman, you know, certain times of day, like late evening and early morning, you see the water out there and you just know there's a big one out there. And you just kind of drawn out and say, "I want to get that one." And he says, "I'm going fishing." And the rest said, "We're going to go with you." This is the evening. And they're in the boat, throwing the net out. They didn't have lines and casting, I don't think, like we did. But throwing the net out, pulling the net in all night. By morning, there's Jesus on the shore. "Hey, any meat? Did you catch anything?" That's kind of a common thing between fishermen. "Hey, what'd you get?" And they pull their boat up and pull their big stringer up in the air. "Whoa, look at that. Do you have any meat?" "No, nothing." "Well, I'll tell you what, throw the net on the right side of the boat." Now, the boat hadn't moved anywhere. They've been throwing over here, you know, right next to the boat, all night. You throw it on the right side. And they threw the net down, and they couldn't even pull the catch up. And John looks at the man on the shore. He turns to Peter and says, "It's the Lord." So Peter grabs his cloak, which he had taken off, and jumps in the water in this early morning hour. John paddles the other boat to shore, and they're pulling the fish with them. And Jesus said, "Bring the fish." They conned the fish out. And there was Jesus with a fire going. There was Peter shivering in the early morning hours of having gotten an early morning bath next to the fire, warming himself again. I can't help but thinking back at that last fire. I wonder if he was thinking, I remember that night. I remember standing by those servants and soldiers and Anyway, Jesus had the fish cooking and the bread, and you could just smell that, and then hunger. And they all sat down around the fire and had breakfast. And then Jesus turns to Peter. Peter, he doesn't say this, but there's an elephant in the room. We need to address this issue. Do you love me? Oh, Lord, I do love you. I do love you. Feed my lambs. Peter, do you love me? Lord, you know I love you. Yes, I do. Feed my sheep. Shepherd them. Tend them. And then a third time, Peter, do you love me? Lord, you know I love you. You know. But Peter had to hear it himself. And he had to see in the eyes of Jesus love and acceptance and forgiveness. Sheep do this. Sometimes they're sleeping in a hollow on an incline. If they roll over on their back in their sleep, oftentimes they can't get back up again. The rumen cuts off the blood supply of their legs, and their legs go numb, just like falling asleep, you get the tingling. If they're left like that, they'll die. So the shepherd is out looking for sheep who have fallen down and can't get up, and goes to them, turns them back on their feet, rubs their leg until the circulation gets there going again, and they run off with the other sheep. Sometimes our shame, failure, can be a stop. And when we need the help of a kind shepherd who will come alongside and explain forgiveness, demonstrate love and acceptance, and put his arms around us, you're part of the group. We love you. Number five, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. The word righteousness can also be termed what's right. He leads me in the path of what's right. There is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. It's a funny thing about sheep. We can't always tell what's right. That's why God gives a gift to the church. Men who will help explain what's right. Help us on that path into what's right. And number six. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. He, the shepherd, is with the sheep. The valley, as opposed to the green pasture, as opposed to the water hole, can be a darker place. I remember when I was speaking at a boys' camp out in Durango, Colorado. And across the highway from the camp, which was on the river, was a, I don't know, I'm not sure what you call this kind of a hill, but huge boulders just all the way up the hillsides and over the, what I would call a small mountain. And down in the bottom of these boulders was a sandy valley that would weave between big boulders and round things. And during a time when I wasn't occupied in the camp, I decided to take a hike up that valley. And I walked for quite a ways, and all of a sudden I saw a wet spot in the valley in the sand, and there was a mountain lion print in the sand, a fresh print. I just had that cold chill go up my spine and feeling the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I felt like I was being watched. Fear gripped me in that valley a little bit. It caused me to do something. I turned around and got out. Not a safe place, perhaps. Valleys can be very, very frightening. The valley of death can be, it is life-changing, not only for those that die, but for those who remain. The promise, though, is this, that in this place where the shadow of death is coming down on me, light is shining somewhere, because there wouldn't be shadow unless light was there. But nonetheless, it's coming down on us. It's a difficult place. Life doesn't remain the same. There's an emptiness caused by death. I want to just remind you, it is a walk through grief. It's a walk. It's not the same. It's not a cookie cutter experience. But it's a walk through the valley. I remember one day at the hospital, I was called to a room. I don't recall whether I knew what I was going to face or didn't know what I was going to face, but I remember entering the room, and there were several women standing beside the bed, and there was a lady in the bed, and just looking at her, I could tell she was in really, really tough shape. Her breathing was labored, long pauses between breaths. My experience said, this lady is not going to live long, thinking that, didn't say anything. And I said to the family, the ladies that were there, what can I do for you? And they said, could you pray? And so I said, let's pray. So I prayed, and as I finished, we all looked up, and she was gone. For us, life is like that. There will become a time when we exit. We step out to the rest of our life, which is going to last forever. We set aside this earthly tent and put on that palace from heaven with the Lord. C.S. Lewis wrote about his journey through grief. And there comes a time when we step out of that darkness of the valley, although life is never the same again. And he wrote this, something quite unexpected has happened. It came this morning early for various reasons, not in themselves all that mysterious. My heart was lighter than it had been for many weeks. For one thing, I suppose I'm recovering physically from a good deal of mere exhaustion. And I'd had a very tiring but very healthy 12 hours the day before and a sounder night's sleep. And after 10 days of low-hung gray skies and motionless warm dampness, the sun was shining and there's a light breeze. And suddenly, at the very moment when so far I mourned her least, I remembered her best. Things change in the valley. But the promise is the shepherd is with us. When I was in business, I had an employee that lived in the city. And one day he was on the way to our place, our work. And I got a call from his wife. And as soon as she answered the phone, she says, My baby's blue. Where's Paul? Never having dealt with anything like that, I was shocked. I said, I'll send him right home. So as soon as he came, Paul, you need to go home. Your wife needs you. So he went home. We walked that journey with them. And I remember my fear of dealing with that. I remember what I did, though. I called our pastor. I said, Pastor Dick, could you go? They need you. And he said something to me I won't forget. He said, you can do it too. You can do this too. The sheep are calmed by his presence. And one of the things that we learn and taught often with chaplains is that you don't really need much to say, but you need to be present. He's with us. Number 7, he protects and rescues. He has a rod and a staff, and those implements comfort me. Why is that a comfort? Why is that stick, that rod, a comfort? Well, in Africa, according to Keller, they would dig up a bush that had a long stick, but a knob of the root still attached to this hardwood, and they would carve that thing so that it had this knob on there, and they'd use it as a club, and also a club they could throw at a predator. And a staff used to separate, perhaps feuding sheep, perhaps to rescue a lamb that had fallen into a ditch or a low spot. It's a comfort to know the shepherd has the means by which he can help. The shepherd should bring comfort through his corrections. The other thing that the rod is used for is for counting. Now, if I were to count you in the audience tonight and just look at you, it would be hard to keep my numbers straight unless I stuck my finger out there and looked down my finger. Then I could point to each person and make a count. That's what the rod's for. You put the rod out there, you could count your sheep. Remember the parable Jesus said there were 100 sheep and one went astray and he left the 99? He knew exactly how many sheep he had. The shepherd knows who belongs in the flock. And he knows if one goes away, he goes after that sheep. Oh, they just come and go. No, wait a minute. We go after the sheep to belong, to rescue, to comfort. And the last, thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. I grew up thinking that this was a literal table, like a place where you put plates and forks, knives and spoons and cups and things on this table. You know, I never got to this fact that this we're still in the sheep analogy. This is somewhere out there. When shepherds would take their sheep out, they wouldn't stay in one spot because that would abuse the land. They have to move the sheep so that the grass can grow again. So as they move, and during the summer months, they move to higher and higher elevations. Tablelands are what are referred to as mesas, flat lands at a higher elevation. And he would go on before them to the next pasture, checking the pasture out. Are there poisonous weeds? Ken was telling me about some particular blossoms at a particular time of year that were poisonous to sheep, and he'd have to remove those things. And so he would go on ahead, checking the water, checking the food, checking the fields, looking for signs of predator. Now, if you've ever been hunting, you know you look for scat. You look for scratches on the trees. You look for broken branches. You look for signs that animals have been there. And what kind of animals have been there? The shepherd knows that. He's gone on before, just like Jesus. Went on before. He was tempted in all points as we are, yet without sin. He knows our infirmities. He knows our weaknesses. He intercedes for us. So David concludes, with all these things in mind, that the shepherd is good. He says, surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life because my cup is overflowing. All the good things, all the benefits of having this shepherd cause my cup to overflow. Now when Jesus said, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. He was talking about this lot in life, this thing that must be done. So it's how life is lived out in that moment. And David is saying, how my life is lived out in this moment is overflowing. Just like Jesus said to us, that out of your innermost being will flow rivers of living water. And talked about an abundant life for those that belong to him. Our cups would overflow. And we have hope because as his own, we will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. It's a long time. It's a real long time. What a promise to be in the home of care, the home of love, the home of all the benefits that were lost in the fall. Ours to experience forever. God is good to us. We need to pray for the work of our shepherds here in this fellowship. We need to pray that God would strengthen them and encourage them in their work. It is not easy. Sleepless nights, hard days, stress, concern. We need to pray for them. And we're going to sing a song right now, which is a prayer song. Savior, like a shepherd, lead us. Much we need that tender care. And Bonnie's going to come. Can you all read this up here? Maybe not. It's in number 170 if you need the book. Number 170.
Savior, like a shepherd, lead us. Much we need thy tender care. In thy pleasant pastures feed us. For our use thy folds prepare. Blessed Jesus, blessed Jesus. Thou hast bought us thy we are. Blessed Jesus, thou hast bought us thy we are.
Let's all stand as we sing the second verse.
We are thine, thou befriend us, be the guardian of our way. And defend us, because when we go astray, blessed Jesus, you'll hear us when we pray. Blessed Jesus, you'll hear us when we pray. Thou hast promised to receive us, poor and sinful though we be. Thou hast mercy to relieve us, grace to cleanse and power to free. Blessed Jesus, early let us turn to thee. Blessed Jesus, early let us turn to thee. Early let us seek thy grace.
To do something just a little bit different tonight. This is to fulfill what the shepherd does to allow his sheep to ruminate. So this is you thinking out loud about what we talked about tonight and share it with perhaps someone else. So I've got a mic here. This is not to make you feel uncomfortable, but allow other people here. So if you have something you thought about, or maybe you have a song that it reminded you of, or a testimony of some sort, you want to share that, you just let me know, and I'm going to bring the mic over to you. You're thinking about, ruminate.
Hello, everybody. I don't know, you probably don't all know me, but my name's Norman Harrop. I came to this church 'in need, I think. I'm trying to start a business, and in the business, this was really very similar to the way that we're trying to present it. Though it's not necessarily a church, we try to love people, we try to meet their needs and allow them to meet other needs. And this was in so much in line, I could just totally line everything up with what we just went over, with what I would like my business to turn into. I know maybe half, a little less than half of the congregation is here, but I would like to ask that you all pray that as I start my production in my business, that I do it for God's glory. Sure, I would like income from it, but I would like to also help people to understand that there's help out there. There's a way to understand things out there that we all need. I'll get in a little deeper with you on it if we get a chance to talk. But I would like I just would like for you all to pray that God's will be done, in my life and in the direction that I've tried to lead myself in toward this business and studied it and just viewed and looked and made mistakes and seen mistakes and I just want to ask for God's blessing. I want to ask for you guys to pray that's what will happen as I do this. Thank you.
Thank you, Norm. Anyone else? Thoughts? How has he been leading you? How has he been taking care of you? Bill?
It says at the beginning of that passage, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And then he explains all these things that the shepherd does for the sheep. And obviously we're talking about God shepherding David or Jesus shepherding us. And we've been discussing that in terms of our pastor being a shepherd for the local flock. And, we don't think of ourselves that much as sheep all the time. And when you were talking about this, I was thinking about how utterly helpless sheep are, how utterly helpless I am before the Lord and even before the pastor.
Yeah, we're his flock. He'll take care of us. Yeah, thank you, Bill. Anyone else? Zach.
Yeah, so growing up, we had sheep on the farm, and so we raised sheep, and so I could relate with a lot of these principles of sheep needing help and doing things that they ought not to and getting stuck and whatnot. And just seeing that as an example of the Bible calling us sheep and kind of how that it's so applicable to how we often act as people and just realizing the need that we have for a shepherd, especially for Christ and what he did for us. And one of the things that came to mind this last week was the in the Beatitudes of Christ's Sermon on the Mount, the blessed are the poor in spirit, and recognizing our need for Christ and where we're at spiritually without him. And the need that we have there is something that is always good to remind ourselves and recognize that it doesn't come from ourselves. It's something that we receive from him. So.
All right, Greg, why don't we sing one more song here? I think we're running out of time. Thank you all.
It's already open. That's great.
Why don't we sing the psalm? It's a little, it's actually an older Irish melody, and we've sung it before, but it's number 171. And we'll just sing all the way through this. It looks like a lot because there's six verses. There's not, this song goes by pretty quick. But we'll go ahead and sing the King of Love, My Shepherd Is. We'll sing all the verses, and that way we sing this song right into our hearts, and then we can go to dinner. Number 171.
The King of Love, my Shepherd is, whose goodness faileth never. I nothing lack if I am his, and he is mine forever. Where streams of living water flow, my ransomed soul he leadeth, and where the verdant pastures grow, with food celestial feedeth. Perverse and oft I strayed, but yet in love he sought me, and on his shoulder gently laid, and home rejoicing brought me. In death's dark veil I fear comfort still, your cross before to guide me. You spread a table in my sight, your saving grace bestowing, and know what transport of delight from your pure chalice flowing. And though through all the length of days your goodness fails me never, good shepherd, I sing your praise within.
you are dismissed for a meal.